passion, drive, and patience. What brings home the winning trophy is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. From superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED lights, and more, whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to turn your car into the MVP and bring home that win. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hello, it's John Pollock and Wei Ting. Welcome to our Backlash review with the event that went down, not in Winnipeg, but from Lyon, France. Hello, Wei.
Not in Winnipeg. Why? Because Dynamite was just there?
We had a much livelier crowd in Lyon, France than we did in Winnipeg.
Oh, gotcha. Week. Gotcha. Yes.
Right. We're off to a roaring start. How are you today, Wei? It feels like just minutes ago we were talking.
I kind of pretty much was. Yeah. Not much of a hiatus. You know, we did a show, got a few hours of sleep, hopefully, and then came back here, right, for another show. Let's do it.
I'm not going to sidetrack us too much, but How much time did you spend on Meet the Grams?
Oh, man. Yeah, that was
You seemed definitely. Like, in text form, like, it sounded like this was an amazing drop that you seemed just inspired by.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was just a whole slew of events, you know? Like, while we were talking about it on Rewind to SmackDown, Drake released his response, and then not even an hour later, Kendrick responded with his as well. So it was very, very lively last night. So that I think deserves maybe a whole lot of coverage in and of itself. I'm sure people are still breaking it down right now.
Okay. Well, Wei is still digesting.
As are you. You were really caught up too.
Dude, I listened to this, and listen, I'm the furthest thing from any kind of authority, but I thought this thing was incredible. I was like, wow.
Did you listen to them both?
No, I only listened to the Kendrick one. Oh, okay. And I listened to this, and I should go back and
you're doing it.
I am interested in this, like, from afar now. It is certainly got my interest, and you're my helpful person to alert me to kind of all the ins and outs of this.
I think it's over. I don't think there's coming back from it. I think this is it. I think it's done.
How do these end? Does one side just kind of throw in the towel or just stop responding and it moves on? Like, how does this end?
Yeah, somebody could stop responding, or like somebody could release something and then like unanimously the public deems it not worthy. So it could be either of those things. But I think in any scenario, I can't see Drake coming back from it, even if he does respond.
Okay, well, we're not going to, maybe that will come up later, but we are going to get to your calls since we did not do them on Friday on Rewind to SmackDown. We will dedicate some time to your calls here and the Backlash review. But first, a couple of news items that we're going to start with. And it appears that the cuts to NXT were not done, because on Saturday morning, Dave Meltzer reporting at the Wrestling Observer newsletter that Gable Steveson has been cut. Gable Steveson, the Olympic gold medalist in freestyle wrestling in the 2020 Olympic Games that took place a year after that due to the pandemic, two-time NCAA champion, and then signed his NIL deal in 2021. And we have seen different attempts to launch the wrestling career of Gable Steveson, from appearances at WrestleMania, being drafted a few years ago to Raw, to the experiment last summer where he had a pretty forgettable match with Baron Corbin on a NXT special, and had been confined to dark matches of late. And the cut has been made. This is, you know, probably a sizable investment that WWE has put into Gable Steveson over these past couple of years. And I think this would signal the end of just an experiment that they would have to deem a failure. And of course, when you're talking about Gable Steveson, it's hard to talk about him without the June 2019 sexual assault case involving Steveson and one of his teammates, where they were arrested on suspicion of sexual misconduct. And later it was ruled that they would not face criminal charges due to a lack of adequate evidence. And there was a victim that reported she had been raped by the two and went to a hospital for treatment. But the Hennepin County attorney, Mike Freeman, had noted that under the then laws in Minnesota on intoxication, it gives basically there is a victim's ability to give consent if they voluntarily intoxicate themselves. Now, that law has since changed, but it's a loophole that people have looked at here, and it is kind of this, you know, the court of law and then the court of public opinion, and sometimes those things are not parallel with one another. Gable Steveson was not charged, and the argument would be if he has not been charged, it doesn't necessarily mean that the public is going to accept that. And I always felt if Gable Steveson got the full call up to the main roster, that story was likely going to resurface again for people that were not aware of it. There's also the timing of this. They just finished the Olympic trials last weekend, and Gable Steveson, I mean, would have been the guy who is representing the U.S. in freestyle wrestling at heavyweight is Mason Paris, a guy that Gable Steveson has beaten three times over the last couple of years. Like, Gable Steveson, on a couple of weeks' notice, probably could have gone into these trials and he would have been the favorite. And I was asking around about, like, are there potential ways he could still make the Olympic team this year? And my understanding is probably not, but I wouldn't say that 100%. But I mean, you look at the timing here, this guy would have, if he had been cut months ago, I think he'd be in the Olympics this summer. And it does open up the question of what's going to be his career path. Is he going to dedicate himself to four more years of wrestling to do the Olympics again? Does he go the mixed martial arts route, which means learning striking? And anyway, a lot of questions, and this is obviously kind of reminds me a little bit way of like Cain Velasquez, like this person that they signed with high hopes. And I think with Gable Steveson, they had a much longer term view of having success, whereas Cain was probably more of a short term project.
Sure. Yeah. And in very different circumstances with the two of them. But I'll say, like, Kane showed a much bigger aptitude for professional wrestling than I've seen from Gable Steveson. I think at the very
I would say outside of WWE, Kane definitely did. In WWE, he felt like a very odd fit for them. But the Lucha stuff that Kane did, I thought was, you know, certainly.
Yeah, I guess maybe strictly speaking of like what somebody had to offer in ring, and never really saw it out of Gable Steveson. And I think maybe there were always questions about how dedicated he was to professional wrestling when he always seemed to still have like one foot into the world of amateur wrestling and trying to compete for this Olympic team. And maybe they just beyond, you know, with the lack of progression, the headache that comes with the PR, and I would just say the cost potentially with the contract. And at this point, like, even like the positive like sort of press that might come from having an Olympic gold medalist as a part of your roster, like 4 years removed at least from the last Olympics, there really doesn't seem to be as much upside to having this guy as there might have been in the immediate, you know, aftermath of him winning that championship and being announced as part of the WWE roster. They're clearly in a position now where they're not necessarily reliant on these sort of like crossover stars, or at least not, you know, people that they have to start from the ground up, when they have the ability to just build a lot of stars on their own. And I completely understood why this didn't necessarily work out for either of them.
Yeah. I'll say in regards to the 2019 case, it's not as though WWE was gun shy about like this preceded him signing with WWE. Like, they were clearly okay with that, you know, that being a part of his history. It wasn't something that was going to deter them if this guy had panned out. I think this is certainly, I think that doesn't help, but this was more a case of just obviously making a decision, probably having a big financial investment in this guy and having to eventually just cut bait with this guy. But the next step of his career will be a noteworthy one to see where he goes. And, you know, he has spoken about mixed martial arts, but he does have age on his side. He'll be 24 later on this month. But you're starting at a position like a Bo Nickel, for instance. And I think he would be kind of on the higher end of what you could expect, but it is like, you could be as elite of a wrestler as Gable Steveson, but that does not ensure success in today's environment of mixed martial arts, where you have to be so well-rounded. And given his name, he probably would be the kind of guy that would be on the UFC's radar and in there fairly quickly as well. So I don't know if you'd even have that developmental phase, but you could also be looking at years to be truly becoming a competent like striker. But anyway, it's...
And his brother's still around.
His brother is Damon Kemp, yeah, in the still in the No Quarter Catch crew. WrestleMania 41, so we will be getting the announcement later today during the Kentucky Derby broadcast on NBC. So they will be announcing the location and when it's all going down. So if anything gets relayed while we're still on the air, we will discuss it. But if not, it'll be up on the site later on today. And just touching on some notes from earlier today, New Japan held its Wrestling Dontaku card in front of over 4,200 people at the Fukuoka International Center. We will have a review Sunday on the site with Karen Peterson and Bruce Lord on the Post Wrestling Cafe. John Moxley retained the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship against Ren Narita, and now will face Shota Umino next week at the Resurgence event in Ontario, California. Other notable we had two title changes. David Finlay regaining the IWGP Global Heavyweight title from Nick Nemeth, and Chase Owens and Kenta winning the tag titles from Yoshihashi and Hirooki Goto. I've seen a portion of this card. I would highly, highly recommend the Shingo Takagi Gabe Kidd match, which I thought was the best match I saw today. This match was Shingo Takagi.
You mean Shinto?
Shinto?
Oh, you missed it.
Oh, I missed you that. Missed was that how out? He was referred to
you
us?
You missed the call out for Michael Cole during the pay-per-view.
Oh, I did miss that. Shinto.
Shinto oh. Takagi, yeah.
Oh, that's amazing. Well, yeah, Shinto and I can't even get you a weird pronunciation of Gabriel Kidd. I mean, that's a pretty straightforward name. But their match, I just thought it was tremendous, if you get a chance to catch that. And Kaito Kiyomiya regaining the GHC heavyweight crown, beating Io de Dr. Wagner Jr. at today's Wrestle Magic show that Noah put on, and then was confronted by Kenno, that drawing 3,500 people earlier today. And look at this, father and son reunited. Keiji Muto and Kaito Kiyomiya, who, if I was Kiyomiya, I would want this man at arm's length, to say the least. Muto, you've done enough to my last 5 years.
Muto's got a lot of kids.
He definitely does. And
a daughter.
Yes. Maybe Kiyomiya's like, okay, it's safe. The man's retired. What damage can he do at this point? But there you go. What a wonderful pose. And this is not a major wrestling news item, but I thought it was worth noting because we went over the NXT cuts and a lot of them having zero matches in their career and some literally a handful. Well, one of them, Emma Diaz, she's had 3 matches total in her career, one of which was a battle royal that I wouldn't even count. She's already booked herself for Booker T's Reality of Wrestling card next weekend. So there is someone that is at least, you know, going out and getting an indie booking immediately. So I'm always interested to see how some of these talents, the NIL talents or ones that come in through tryouts, how they will respond once they are cut and they're out of the WWE system. And here's one. I mean, she's got a booking next weekend, so good for her.
Very cool.
Okay. Well, we're going to be talking a lot about the environment, the atmosphere in France. And I'm sure there were many people that wanted to be at the LDLC Arena. And if you wanted the full French experience, you could listen to Christophe and Philippe on commentary and listen to the broadcast in French. And Wei has some advice on how you could have gone through the French experience.
You know a lot of reasons by now why we love using NordVPN. It allows us access to geo-blocked services like AEW+. It helps us unlock cheaper prices for pay-per-views. But let's not forget a VPN's most important function, protecting your online privacy. If you do any sort of downloading of content, or if you regularly use Wi-Fi outside of your home, a trusted VPN helps mask your IP to protect your browsing from advertisers, hackers, and even your ISP. And while yes, the protection of a VPN may come with slower browsing speeds, NordVPN happens to be the fastest in the game. Named CNET's fastest VPN of 2024 through their extensive speed tests, Nord clocks an average download speed loss of just 11.1%, compared to Surfshark's 17% and ExpressVPN's 24.8%. Get the protection you need from the most reputable and fastest VPN on the market for just $3 a month. Sign up through nordvpn.com/postwrestling, where listeners can get 4 bonus months on top of all 2-year plans, plus a 30-day money-back guarantee. Again, nordvpn.com/postwrestling. Get your bonus months and let them know you found Nord through us.
Smooth.
Very nice. Excellent. Very well done.
Backlash France from Saturday afternoon. They announced the attendance of 11,628, which might be pretty close to the accurate figure. And if you missed the countdown show, that's what I'm here for, folks. It was tons of stuff here. We saw we got the disclosure from Kevin Owens that he does not drink coffee as he toured France with Caleb Braxton. And then Big E talking about the incoming MFT, Tama Tonga. Who is this guy? Is he just did he just debut? Is this his first match? We've never heard of Tama Tonga before. And Big E mentions that, you know, this guy, I've seen him, part of the Gorillas of Destiny in New Japan Pro Wrestling. And CM Punk is like, what? You can't say New Japan on TV. And Big E just informs him things are different now.
Yes. Yes, they are.
Yeah.
We
Shinto is
more.
No longer off limits.
That's right.
As well, this was quite the insight into the performer's mind. CM Punk was mentioning, crowds like this in France that make the sacrifices of being on the road all worth it. And that when you go out in front of a crowd like that, all your aches and pains temporarily disappear. If you have a migraine, it goes away and then it all comes flooding back afterwards. So we found out that, you know, take a seat, Excedrin. If you want to become a, you know, averse to migraines, you can get 20-minute relief by becoming a main event performer and competing in places like France. Migraine relief.
I'll keep that in mind. All right.
It's wonderful. All right. Kicking things off, it is Kevin Owens and Randy Orton against the MFT and Solo Sikoa with Paul Heyman. And this crowd, I mean, they were even louder than SmackDown. And this was like a mini concert, I would say, at points of this show where they were singing, including an entire arena of people readily admitting that they know the lyrics to Voices by Rev Theory as Randy Orton came out. Never in my life did I imagine I would hear this song sang by an entire arena of people as Randy Orton came out.
Yeah, I'm familiar with the chorus, but like I can't tell you what the
outside of I hear voices in my head. Do you know any of the lyrics of this song? Because this whole crowd did.
No, I have no idea. No.
Well,
but just awesome. You know, the announcers.
This was like no joke. This was one of the greatest crowds in WWE history.
Sure. Yeah. They, you know, they
for sustainability over the course of 3 hours. Like this was as impressive as it gets.
The announcers just completely fall back to let the crowd speak for itself. They were very much part of the draw of this show itself.
There was a massive "We Want Roman" chant, and the crowd just roars as the four start to brawl, and they go to the floor. We get officials out. There was a cameo here where one of the security guards was former NXT talent Sylvester Laforte, who got dropped on the desk by Randy Orton, and this causes Nick Aldis to come out and make this a street fight, and as though they were just going to wave this one off and call it DQ. So we get the impromptu street fight and impromptu weapons that were all positioned underneath the ring. So maybe they had the same insight that Sky Blue did the other night to know that maybe, just in case, let's plant some weapons in case.
They must have known a street fight was coming, yeah.
So they fought their way into the crowd. We had trash cans brought out. The crowd just wants tables. They're chanting ECW. Kendo stick is brought out. And Owens brings out the tables. Giant pop for that. And he splashes Tama Tonga through the table. There was a great spot where they were coming back from the ring or from the crowd. And Owens leaps off the barricade for a splash. And Randy climbs on top of the barricade. And you're thinking Randy is going to jump off this barricade. And even Randy realized in the moment, not a prayer. I don't care how hot this crowd is. And he just hopped down. I mean, this guy was probably staring at another year off if he like tore his ACL jumping off this barricade. So
he might do it eventually.
He's not going to do it. I mean, if ever there was the time for Randy to do some spot off a barricade, this was it. So Sikoa puts Orton through a table with a Samoan drop, and Cole and Graves are mentioning the history of Tama Tonga, the titles that he held in New Japan. And I thought this was going to be the most noteworthy reference. Michael Cole mentioning the classic matches that Tama Tonga had with Evil.
Yeah, and this is where the Shinto...
Okay. I missed this.
Great series of matches were also brought up.
Okay, well, Shinto and Evil in action earlier today. So they're beating up Kevin Owens with the trash can lid. It's a 2-on-1 until Owens reverses an Irish whip, putting Sokoa through a table in the corner. And Orton returns, does his big comeback on Tama Tonga, signals for the RKO and hits it, but gets saved by Solo Sokoa. So Sokoa and Orton end up on the desk, and Orton stops the Samoan spike, RKOing Sokoa on top of this desk. And Owens is delivering chair shot after chair shot to Tama Tonga, places four chairs upright, and they fight on the turnbuckle, ending with a fisherman buster delivered to Tama Tonga onto these four chairs. And Owens goes for the cover, 1-2, and referee Dan Engler is yanked out of the ring by the debuting Tangaloa. Yes, it is Camacho. He is now Samoan from his last ancestry during his last time around. The bicycle is gone, and here he is back home, and he nails Orton and Owens with the steps. We see a spinning solo to Kevin Owens on the chair, and the Samoan spike keeps Kevin Owens down in 19 minutes and 38 seconds. Paul Heyman is in shock, so we're led to believe this is another rogue move by Solo Sokoa, and Tangaloa, the latest member of the new bloodline after you know, after his rural revitalization match with Great O'Conn, the last time we saw him in action.
After the gyoza match. Mm-hmm. That was supposed to be the eel match. He had enough gyoza and just made his way all the way to the WWE afterwards.
Why, like, put your career on the line when you could put, like, gyoza as the stipulation for the KOPW match? So,
truly, yes. What a way to go out. Yeah, I mean, this probably was the best possible spot for any match to be in on this card. First match on the show with the crowd this hot with that much pent-up energy to release. There was no way this match could have failed. And I thought it was a really interesting way that they presented the hardcore sort of street fight stipulation here. I mean, the street fight itself isn't much of a stipulation to hook the audience beforehand. So I thought it was very well played here to present as almost a bonus to this already very interactive crowd. There were a lot of really good, satisfying spots here. I didn't even think they needed to go crazy with the stunts for a crowd that was already this hot. And there really wasn't all that was too dangerous until that fisherman buster through the chairs, which was just absolutely insane, that Tangaloa took. I was curious
Tama Tonga's back just looked like wrecked from the various strikes he took to the back. Like, it was just all cut up and welted.
I'm sorry, I meant Tama Tonga instead of Tangaloa taking that fisherman buster spot. I was really curious to see how they would book Tama Tonga in this match, because if the goal is to make him come across as this sort of like sadistic, you know, uncontrollable member of the group that would like commit vehicular homicide just to, you know, make a statement. I don't know if that really came across. I would say by the end of this match, Tama Tonga came across to me more like a Giovanni Vinci type of like more lower ranking guy of the group. Tough, but like not a significant contender, at least like not protected in the way that I think Solo Sikoa was when he was initially brought up into the bloodline. But I think the idea now is to have him attached to Tangaloa, and as a tag team, the two of them combined feel like a bigger threat. And as sort of like this sort of attachment now to Solo Sikoa, Solo Sikoa with the Gorillas of Destiny attached to him, I think that's really cool. You know, they're a known entity. It boosts Tama's profile. I was initially asking, man, we're talking about a roster that is already this bloated. What room is there for a Tangaloa, you know, at 40 years old? But I think there's cachet in a Gorillas of Destiny tag team run, especially as, you know, sort of like the muscle behind a Solo Sikoa. So I totally understand the signing, and I'm looking forward to seeing how they do it all.
Look at that little tease by Big E on the Countdown Show.
What's that?
That's what you get if you tune into the Countdown Show. This would certainly lead you to believe of like this kind of four-man unit that everyone expects, you know, Jacob Fatu to be attached to this. And I mean, of all the guys, I mean, he probably represents the greatest upside in terms of being that,
Jacob?
Solo Sikoa as sort of the leader of this new bloodline group. And Jacob Fatu is like the monster of the four.
Yeah. I could see that. I could see maybe at this point, maybe having Jacob Fatu attached to Roman Reigns, even, you know, just so that you split the members a little bit more, just to give equal shine, because people
it's a Samoan draft.
Absolutely. They can have their own because Roman wasn't a part of it. But yeah, I mean, I get the signing. It's a good addition to your tag team roster. We'll see if they can gain any sort of significant traction.
Bayley, Naomi, and Tiffany Stratton for the women's championship. Immediately, the crowd is singing for Bayley while also chanting Tiffy time. And we're getting a series of roll-ups, double jackknife attempt by Stratton. It continues to be a phenomenal crowd response.
Let me just say how incredible this Naomi entrance is, okay? Like, it was pretty great on SmackDown, but man, like, here, seeing it drawn out with the flyer flies out, it hit, like, at such a different way. It felt like really a DJ set here. And then in contrast, Bayley comes out, and her music is so bad. It's so generic. It doesn't really say anything about her current character at all, which I think she's still trying to figure out what it is. But man, like, they need to change that music up. Like, the Bayley entrance is pretty awful in contrast.
Stratton hits Bayley with an Alabama slam, and then Naomi is diving in for the save. And Naomi spears Stratton through the rope, and Stratton comes back with a handspring back elbow, sending Naomi over the barricade, but then she doesn't capitalize and walks into a suicide dive from Bayley. Naomi hits a blockbuster off the barricade to Bayley, split-legged moonsault onto Stratton, and Bayley is in for the save. And then we see Naomi, after a sit-out powerbomb, applies the still-unnamed Starstruck to Tiffany Stratton. They need to come up with a name for this maneuver as she uses it consistently.
Starstruck is a perfectly good name.
I don't know why they don't call it that. I mean, it works perfectly well. And it's broken with a top rope elbow from Bayley, and then the Bayley to belly is hit to Stratton. Stratton manages a cartwheel with Naomi on her back on the floor into an Alabama slam on the desk, and then does an Alabama slam to Bayley onto the other desk, and then lines the two up and does the spot that we have seen multiple times on television for the prettiest moonsault ever, but this time the women get out of the way and they hit a 3D onto Tiffany Stratton.
Call is the 1D.
It's called the 1D, but
for the Jimmy Uso attachment.
Yes. Bayley and Naomi square off, and there's an enziguri by Naomi. Strikes are exchanged, and then after a mahi sprawl cradle by Naomi, Bayley counters and gets the cover, catching her in 13 minutes and 34 seconds while Stratton is out of the ring. And then afterward, Naomi congratulated Bayley, and I thought they did a very good job in here. I think everyone's focus was on Tiffany Stratton, of how she would gel in a triple threat, and I thought she had some very good moments in the match as well, and obviously every one of these matches was lifted by the crowd.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this match. It's kind of almost hard to judge without talking about the crowd, because the crowd really were the most of my focus for a lot of the earlier portions of these matches, because they're so loud, so dynamic. But I thought, just trying to focus on the match itself, man, they presented a really well-worked, like, fast, constant pace of action with this three-way, very well-designed sequences. I think Naomi's, first of all, again, I have to speak about her entire presentation. It's just so great. She really does feel like a superstar. And when she wrestles, she looks like she's just having so much fun out there. And it's something that just has really become unlocked, you know, in this this time coming back to the WWE. I continue to be really impressed with Tiffany Stratton's athleticism. She feels at this point more than capable of these sort of performances at this high level on stages this big. And you see her right now and you just continue to think, like, how good she's going to be a year from now, 2 years from now, 3 years from now. Like, that's an investment that's really already paying off for them. Like, she's a future Bianca Belair. So she, very entertaining match. I kind of feel sad to say it, but, like, Bayley is the veteran. Bayley, like, they, thank goodness she has that, this song from the crowd that they continue to love to sing for her. But, like, as far as, like, a presentation and character goes, she is actually, like, probably the least interesting of the three. But she does have this upcoming program with Bianca Belair to try to tell that story. But I'm looking for Bayley to, like, you know, hit that next level a little bit harder for this championship run.
Yeah, and I mean, they did keep Tiffany Stratton excluded from the finish. They could continue in that direction too. I'm interested to see what the follow up is with Tiffany Stratton after this match and where they follow this with. Jey Uso is seen warming up when Solo walks by with the Gorillas of Destiny and Paul Heyman, and they're all looking dismissively at Jey Uso. And no words here, just scary looks at one another.
Yeah.
Jey Uso makes his entrance, and what an entrance this was. So Jey comes through the crowd, and you've got the lights down, and everyone's phone is on. So this just looked incredible. Like, this looked like a rave as Jey Uso was coming out. And, man, this crowd, like, it was just Jey, like, leading them with the yeeting throughout the first half of this match. I mean, this was a really, really incredible entrance.
Really awesome. Honestly, like, these sort of visuals are almost worth the price of admission alone, I'm sure, for the people that were there. And they know how to, like, shoot them in a way that makes them feel that much more special these days. So it was just fun to see him, like, you know, conduct this crowd into this entire thing.
So Jey is leading the crowd and then gets cut off by Damian Priest, who mocks the sign. J.D. McDonagh shows up, who is called a Klingon by Michael Cole because of the wound on his head, and grabs Jey from the floor, and that leads to Priest hitting a spear, and Priest starts yelling at J.D., asking, "What are you doing here?" And Jey super kicks both of them, hits an Uso splash for a two count, and then they get into forearm exchanges. Damian hits the razor's edge, but Jey stops the South of Heaven. He spears Priest again, and he goes for another Uso splash, but this time Finn Balor runs down. He spots him, super kicks him off the apron, and that leads to a South of Heaven, which Jey kicks out of. Place goes insane for that kick out. Spinning roundhouse kicks from Priest, and then is caught with the super kick. Jey hits a few follow-ups, spears Priest, and the Uso splash lands. You think it's over, but JD places Priest's foot onto the bottom rope to break the count. So Jey takes out JD with a tope suicida, spears Finn Balor on the floor, and as he's climbing the turnbuckle, is knocked off balance, where Priest hits the South of Heaven off the turnbuckle, pinning Jey in 15 minutes and 45 seconds. And Balor and JD continue the attack, and Priest yanks them off and tells them to stop. He doesn't need their help, and tells them to just stand next to him as he poses with the belt. So continuing the problems within Judgment Day. And while this was more clean than I thought this match was going to be, unless they have some idea for Damian Priest, I could see them trying to squeeze a match between these two again in a couple of weeks, where maybe it's a cage match or something where no one can run in. They did make a big emphasis on that. But it was Priest retaining, and good match, obviously elevated by the crowd. I wouldn't say this blew me away, but it was fine outing here for a title match.
Great crowd interaction for Jey Uso, great atmosphere, but I didn't like the match that much. I still find Jey singles in-ring style lacking something, especially like put into a main event role. Again, he has the crowd interaction down really well. You know, probably maybe the best on Raw. You can argue in some ways, like at the moment, maybe the best on the entire roster of active performers. But there's something missing in the matches, you know, and it's more than one occasion now where I feel like it's worth at least like saying that this seems to be a consistent fault, where I just don't know if the storytelling or drama are there for me personally. And I would say the overbooking in this match was their way of protecting him in the loss, but it probably also negatively affected my opinion about the match itself.
Yeah, it's, you know, you're in a tough position on Raw at the moment where you are down both Seth Rollins and CM Punk. So Jey Uso is by necessity needs to be in a pretty important role on the babyface side. And that's why I don't see someone just being thrown out there on 3 weeks notice for Saudi Arabia, unless you're going to put Priest in some kind of situation with the Judgment Day. And it's not even a title defense on the Saudi Arabia show, but we'll see what the follow-up is to this. This was not a match that like blew me away by any stretch, but again, it was, they had an awesome audience, and I think that's going to be most people's kind of judge or how they judge this. We have Philippe Chereau on.
Well, before that, we had our latest QR code from
missed
the WWE. And this is a QR code that when you go to it displays a phone number. The phone number is 888-280-3999, which I think I've seen somebody say is actually the phone number that they use for the White Rabbit teases too. So it's the WWE's 1-888 line. And when you call it, you are presented with a message. And would you care to hear it now, John?
Yeah, let's hear it.
You think you're so close to finding him, but you don't even know what you're looking for. He's not what you think. He just wants to help. That's all he's ever wanted. He opens up his arms and makes you feel like you matter. Like you belong. He doesn't change you. He reminds you. He wants to know, why did you forget about them? He says he opened the door, and the time of secrets has come to an end.
Okay, so that was actually like an altered,
You're so close to finding him.
It was like an altered, sort of cleaned up version of what you could actually hear. Because what you could actually hear was a lot, was just more like a distorted sort of pitch shifted type of version of that. So you got to hear very clearly what the message was.
Well, kudos to them for making that a toll-free number.
Yeah, it would have been pretty awful to make people pay for that. I don't know if those are even things anymore, like 1-900 things.
Yeah, I mean,
are they even like? Do people even?
Wouldn't that be a swerve if they sent you to like a
cost you money?
Yeah. Okay. Well, edge of my seat. Philippe Chereau of the French broadcast team announces this is the largest gate for any arena show in WWE history. So Brandon did put out the some stats here. This would beat last summer's Money in the Bank show at the O2 Arena, although adjusted for inflation, the largest would have been WrestleMania 5 in 1989 in Atlantic City, which was in 1989 1.63 million, but today would be over $4 million in 2024. We don't know what the figure was for Backlash France, but yes, this was promoted as the largest arena gate in WWE history.
Great. Awesome.
Glad to know that they're going to be doing okay this quarter.
Yeah.
Kabuki Warriors against Jade Cargill and Bianca Belair for the women's tag titles. Belair and Jade Cargill matching red gear here. Maybe a bit of a tip off. Not investing in gear for just, challengers.
Sino said that they were dressed up like the Dora Milaje from Black Panther.
Okay. They both had great entrances here. And as you can imagine, the crowd very much into all four throughout the match. Jade was tagged in about 2 minutes in, and she catches Sane with a swinging backbreaker, and they double team Sane. Sane then pulls Belair by her braid, who backflips off the turnbuckle and is hit with a head kick by Asuka on the floor, so they get the advantage on her for quite some time. And then Asuka is working for a Fujiwara armbar and is lifted up onto Belair's shoulders, but she manages to tag Sane, who stops Belair, and Belair avoids the insane elbow. She's fighting to her corner and finally makes the tag to Jade Cargill, who enters the ring with a springboard crossbody, hits a pair of stinger splashes onto both women, and the Kabuki Warriors nail her with spinning back fists, and Kairi looks to be going for a Shiranui, which was not timed very well, and then transitions
like
to
a Destino, almost.
I mean, it's relatively, we're talking a similar move. She goes for an armbar, and the referee is informing her that she is not the legal woman, and they just continue here. And this was where this match, I thought, really hit like a standstill, because it seemed like they were off their timing and didn't seem to know what was going on here. Jade then goes to lift up Kairi, and there's this really weak leg sweep, and she goes down. Sane gets the armbar, and Asuka places Belair in an armbar. Both women lift them up, slam themselves free, and do this double-team wheelbarrow DDT into a slam for a two-count on Sane. The double-team insane elbow is hit onto Bianca. Jade makes the save, and then Jade hoists up Sane and does this awesome transition into the Jaded, where she's onto her shoulders, then into position where she hits it. And Belair follows with the KOD to Kairi on top of Asuka for the win in 17 minutes and 25 seconds. I thought the ending was very strong that they had here for the transition. But I thought this match did have its struggles in the midpoints.
Yeah, the match really fell apart in the middle. Maybe they kind of saved it with the finish, depending on, your viewing of it. I thought, though, it's worth maybe focusing on the part in the middle, because I thought it served as a spot where we could really see where Jade Cargill is at when it comes to not just being able to present herself as a star, but it being able to navigate so many of these sort of like unpredictabilities of a live professional wrestling match. And she looked lost in there. you know. And I don't think people are going to be too hard on her because I don't think it was her fault. It was mainly Kyrie, and I would even say Asuka.
Kyrie seemed very off,
the referee
too,
as well.
Yeah.
But again, it did serve as an opportunity to see how Jade Cargill would react in this sort of high-pressure situation on live TV. There was an opportunity for her to show off what maybe veteran instinct she might have developed by this point, the way that Rhea Ripley did in that match against Tegan Nox on the Mae Young Classic, where still relatively young in her career, but like, to me, that was when I first really noticed Rhea Ripley, was how she handled the Tegan Nox injury and how she was able to take command of the match. Didn't really get that from Jade Cargill. Again, nobody's really going to hold that against her, but this was maybe a missed opportunity for her to show what she had. And maybe we've seen what she had. She still, to me, comes across as somebody who like is able to do a patterned match that's well rehearsed. But when it comes to improvisation, maybe still missing a bit. But we do have to focus on Kairi Sane here. You know, I've said several times throughout this run of hers in the WWE where I just felt like something's been off. And typically it's come in the form of like being lost on live TV in sort of situations like this. And this was probably the biggest one. I don't know what happened.
Corey
here.
Graves was not shy either. And kind of like, you know, subtly referring to like, you know, just her really seeming to be like off the mark.
I really expected a lot more of Kairi and Asuka to be able to handle a situation like this better than they did as the veterans here. You know, when something like this happens, why wouldn't you just go back to your corner, tag out, tag back in, and just proceed with the spot as usual? You know, like instead, so she gets called out by the referee, rightfully so, for not being the legal person. And instead of going to tag out, she goes
they
to
just continue
to apply her armbar to carry on with the sequence that we saw her later pick up on. Makes no sense. And it made no sense why the referee would allow this to continue to happen when you just called this person the non-legal person. The referee should have at that point taken control of the match, said, go back to your corner and tag out. And instead, like, they just got lost. It resulted in just, like, dragging this out way too long with having Asuka go to the corner, tagging back out. Then, like, an improvised sequence with Jade and Asuka that clearly had no business being on TV, made Jade look bad, Asuka look bad, tagged back out so that Kairi can come back in, a really bad ankle pick in order to just get back to that armbar sequence.
It looked really, just, really
like,
weak.
Just very unimpressed, I would say, overall with the handling of that situation, particularly from Kairi and Asuka. And we do have to note, like, there could be language barriers there. But honestly, still, at this level, with people that have been this experienced in the WWE, I expected a whole lot more.
Yeah, I saw a lot of weaknesses in this match. And at 17 minutes and 25 seconds, I thought that was a really ambitious amount to go out there. And just putting Jade in like limited positions of selling, like you could see like the like it's just not an experienced part of her game. She can mm-hmm. do a lot of the tandem stuff her and Bianca did. Like they had a lot of that stuff down pat. Yeah. Bianca selling like it worked for the hot tag. But this was a big ask to expect this one to go 17 plus. And you did see this match kind of fall apart in the middle of things. But again, it's camouflaged by this really great crowd that was not going to diminish any of the matches. But I mean, if you're just watching it, it's hard to ignore what you were seeing in front of your eyes.
Yeah. Yeah. And like overall, the Jade Cargill experiment has been wildly successful. They've gotten so much out of her already. And she already is a future star. I love this team with Bianca Belair.
And she should be in a tag team at the moment.
But we do realize at this point, realistically speaking, she is still somebody you kind of have to handle with kids gloves. You still have to be very protected with, and she's still relatively green. And that's fine. But I also like have to keep in mind that this is a person who's not just starting out. She's had years now, you know, with through the AEW system doing those forms of matches. But she, like, somebody like a Tiffany Stratton, for instance, has, like, lapped her in many ways, at least developmentally.
Then they announced, this might be a record for the amount of matches we have announced for Raw in advance. It is 8 matches, all King of the Ring and Queen of the Ring tournament matches. So, this is our list for Monday. Ivy Nile against Zoe Stark, Shayna Baszler against Zelina Vega, Lyra Valkyria against Asuka, Natalya versus Io Sky, Drew McIntyre against Finn Balor, Kofi Kingston against Rey Mysterio, Ricochet against Ilya Dragunov, and Gunther against Sheamus. there are several here. These could be extraordinary matches on Raw, and I would have to think this is our max amount of matches we're getting on Monday. But I cannot remember a time we had this many matches announced in advance of Raw, and
this
I
felt,
believe
this felt like an
all happen.
This felt like an AEW Dynamite card. Like, it's not often where I look at a Raw card and I say this show is stacked. And this show is stacked. We're getting Gunther versus Sheamus here. Okay, now I'm hoping they give these enough time. That's always maybe a caveat with Raw, where, like, I don't know, they might not be enough time, or just like the booking.
I mean,
you'll
have to battle
shitty.
The commercial breaks, but certainly Gunther, Sheamus, and Ricochet, Ilya. Oh. I think, but I really feel of the people that are, like, especially for Ilya and Lyra Valkyria, I think they have to go over in their matches, yeah, to establish themselves.
Totally. Yeah, I mean, Lyra Valkyria versus Asuka, hopefully that's good. Kofi Kingston versus Rey Mysterio could be very good as well. So, yeah.
Even Io and Natalya, I mean, that should be a very good match. Like, it's a very good lineup for Raw on Monday. And then all of a sudden, we're at the main event, which is Cody Rhodes and AJ Styles for the Undisputed WWE Championship. They're... AJ is in custom gear that he made to replicate what he wore when he beat Dusty Rhodes in 2003 in NWA TNA.
Is that right?
Yes, that was explained on the show. Oh, I watched his workout video, dude, in the cold plunge.
Yeah.
I mean, man, did this guy sell the world on these cold plunges? I mean, this was quite the... I mean, he swears by this.
Just, you know, jump in cold water 4 minutes a day, and then you can
look
like AJ Styles.
Yeah, that's a long time to be in one of those things.
It really is. But would you look at that? Okay, so he's got purple on his tights in his TNA match against Dusty.
Imagine
Rhodes.
He cut his hair and wore the shorts just to fully. And Cody wrestled in a T-shirt and cowboy boots to complete the look.
All right, cool.
We got about our 54th mention that they're both from Georgia, just in case you forgot. And before he even comes out, the whole crowd is singing for Cody, and he comes out, and an extraordinary response to Cody Rhodes. And by the time the bell rang, like, this crowd, they were like, they could have done anything in this match, and this crowd was just gonna have a party for the next 27 minutes.
They also mentioned that Jessica Carr was the first woman to ref a world championship match, and I'm almost surprised that it's taken that long, you know, especially because, like, Jessica Carr has been around for a while. But yeah, good for her, you know, good for, I guess, about time.
Early on, Cody did the cartwheel and Stardust pose. Lots of singing from this crowd. And then they played...
Phenomenal Club. Il est vraiment phenomenal.
Exactly. Took the words right out of my mouth. They played off of the injury spot, which was never mentioned in the follow-up after the Carmelo Hayes match, but they had Cody's shoulder run into the turnbuckle, and they mentioned... It's been talked about on the internet, this shoulder injury that he could have, and AJ starts targeting the shoulder. So this is, you know, AJ during his 4 minutes has been looking at internet videos and scouting. So Cody tries to deadlift AJ for a superplex, but his back gives out and he is screaming in agony, manages a victory roll. AJ comes back with a ushiguroshi, and then they fight on the edge, and AJ pretty much hits him with a bloody Sunday DDT, and Cody takes AJ and power bombs him through a desk on the floor, which had to have had a lot of force because this broke the unbreakable desk. And they power up to their feet in the ring. They're in their respective corners and just go at it. Bionic elbow from Cody. And then the Cody cutter is caught. AJ's teasing a tombstone, which is reversed. And then Styles lays out Cody and manages the springboard 450, which connects. Cody kicks out of that. So AJ hits the burning hammer. And Cody kicks out at one. And it's Hulk Hogan here just yelling at AJ. This is what Hogan's would have been if he took the burning hammer.
Sorry, what's that?
If Hogan had taken a burning hammer, getting to his knee and just shaking his head. Cody powers up. Cody cutter calls for the crossroads, but it's countered. And then the phenomenal forearm is attempted, but AJ is kicked coming down. And then Cody applies the Kimura. And I thought this was maybe the most interesting spot in the whole match. It is the most direct correlation to Brock Lesnar we have had since the whole lawsuit was filed in January. And the announcers are making references that Cody knows a lot about this hold. Cody had his arm broken with this hold, but they were not going to say the name Brock Lesnar. But I mean, it was very interesting to see this move inserted in there and what that was going to direct everyone's mind to.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I think of it very similar to like Shawn Michaels using the Crippler crossface, like not long after Benoit's death. At this point, like probably just they think of it as just a move that doesn't come with all that all those connotations attached to it. But I did think it was notable how the announcers kind of almost made a point not to mention Brock Lesnar.
Yeah, you didn't have Michael Cole in 2007 yelling, "Shawn Michaels, he learned that move."
Yeah.
From a former colleague. So AJ slams out of the Kimura, and Cody stops the Styles Clash, hits a top rope Cody cutter, which looked great, and then just grabs AJ one solid crossroads and wins in 27 minutes and 19 seconds. I thought this was an excellent main event, and no angle afterward. It was just Cody celebrating in the ring, and this crowd who had the time of their life for 3 hours is what it sounded like. And that's how the show ended. Like a pretty, I would say, like if you were going into this show, I don't think the lone surprise was maybe Tangaloa, that I don't know if anyone foresaw. But the outcomes were probably what you expected. The crowd was amazing, maybe even better than you expected if you had just watched SmackDown. But I thought Cody and AJ was going to be the match of the show, and I thought it was.
It was a very good match. You know, it felt like an AJ Styles main event. A lot of spectacular offense that we don't usually see. You know, we got to see a burning hammer here, brainbuster on the apron, Cody cutter off the top. And of course, all of that heightened by a very incredible crowd. For a first title defense for Cody, and for a PLE match with somebody who hasn't been in the top mix for a long time like an AJ Styles, I thought they overachieved what this could have been, you know, if it was just a standard Cody versus whomever match in North America, for instance. The fact that they still have so many big matchups that they're saving for Cody, it tells you that, like, I think AJ was a really good choice for this particular crowd, for this particular pay-per-view. So it was good. Like, we're at a level now, though, where, like, this isn't even top five of the month, you know, like if we're talking about the past 30 days in terms of just like, you know, high, great quality wrestling. But nonetheless, it was still a very good match that clearly set this crowd home pretty happy.
Just one note from the press conference. This is Brandon Thurston noted that Paul Levesque was asked if Drew Gulak was released and if Ronda Rousey's accusation had anything to do with it. The questioner mentioned Fightful and PW Insider reporting that Gulak was released. Levesque quipped that if you're going to cite news sources, pick good ones. Credible, really. He says Gulak was not released. His contract was just not renewed. He didn't address the part of the question about Rousey's allegation. So
okay.
I think that's whatever. Well, there you go.
Okay, well, I mean, that's worth clarifying that his contract was not renewed and not released. I, you know, take that for what you will. And but was his contract not renewed as a result of Ronda Rousey accusations, I suppose, is a good follow-up question for somebody to ask. Anything else?
That's all I've seen so far. I had the press conference on, but obviously could not hear
maybe
it.
Maybe we'll go through some of Brandon's other notes. Brandon says, Paul Levesque at the press conference says he'll be looking heavily into Italy, hinting at a PLE in the future there. He mentions the London mayor, Sadiq Khan's re-election. Levesque says, we should talk. And there's also one he's got up here so far. Levesque says Nick Khan texted him halfway through the show today saying, stadium ? Hinting at the possibility of a stadium show in France in the future.
Yeah, sorry, I was just looking. The great Neil Flanagan was just
all right. So
as well.
WWE also has officially announced that WrestleMania will be taking place from Allegiant Stadium in Las Vegas, Nevada, April 19th and Sunday, April 20th, 2025.
Okay, there is the official announcement for April 19th and 20th at Allegiant Stadium in Las Vegas. So there you have it, all up to date on the WrestleMania happenings. And worth noting that this will be the latest that WrestleMania has ever taken place, and avoiding the NCAA, the NCAA tournament finals that weekend.
It's 420. I wonder if RVD.
Oh man, RVD. He's gonna get, man. It was Philadelphia this past year, and next year he's. I mean, the guy's set.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
All right. Okay, well, if you want to get in, we will take a couple of phone calls. We also have some feedback. So the floor is yours.
Yeah, let's go to some phone calls here. And let's start things off here with Andy B. Welcome, Andy.
Hi, guys. How are you doing?
Hey,
we're
doing
good, Andy. What did you think of the show today?
Quite enjoyed the show, guys. It was a pretty breezy watch. Not too much emotional weight or anything going into it. But, like, you know, the crowd was electric. And I thought the show was paced pretty well. It wasn't like Elimination Chamber where you had, like, those massive gaps in between the matches. But what I wanted to lament to you guys about this past week in wrestling, because I, with the exception of the pay-per-view and, like, more Raw and Dynamite in particular, I found everything other than the CM Punk Drew stuff and, like, everything involving the Elite and Tony Khan stuff to be a little bit soulless. And I'm now kind of feeling like I'm a bit worn down by, like, this modern 20-minute back-and-forth matches, moves on the apron, the stiff strikes, the dives to the outside. It's all starting to feel a little patterned to me. And now when I look at this Raw roster, I feel like, oh my God, there's going to be a lot more of these matches coming up in my future.
You're strictly speaking about, like, just some of the in-ring content that you've seen recently?
I would say so. It, like, just in general, it feels like, you know, there's, like, there's been like a fusion of all of these different styles of wrestling, and a lot of people are doing the same thing, and there's a self-awareness and, like, a chasing of the critical acclaim and everything. It feels like, with the exception of, like, a few guys who stand out and put a little bit more thought into their work, like, everything is feeling a bit homogenized for me at this point.
I mean, you're going to get different reactions to that thought. I mean, the counter would be, like, the in-ring quality has just risen to such a degree that it feels like WWE is kind of catching up to that, and that, you know, for some, like, there is such a plethora of these great matches that we are seeing on a weekly basis that it is harder than ever, I think, to stand out when kind of the bar for a match to stay in your subconscious is an Ospreay Danielson. That, you know, just watching that Shingo Takagi Gabe Kidd match today, I was like, this was an incredible match. And I imagine by Monday, people will be on to whatever the next match is. But it is kind of like the state of the game. And I think that it's always, you know, you have different styles, different workers that are going to approach things, but there are going to be some, you know, patterned matches, and there's going to be those that can hopefully work outside of the lines to try and stand out in that regard.
How do you think a wrestling match can gain more soul if you feel a lot of the wrestling that you're watching is a bit soulless?
I don't honestly know the answer to that question. I genuinely feel it comes down to the ramifications of the match, because that's kind of what tends to get me most invested at this point. Because when there are ramifications that I can care about, like a Cody Reigns or a Danielson Eddie Kingston or Sting versus the Young Bucks, then it becomes a lot easier for me to, like, suspend my disbelief and to buy into the drama and to connect with the match. So that seems to be what it is for me. Like, it's sort of like you're going back to, like, your old school, where it's more about the personality and the stakes and the importance attached to the outcome.
Mm-hmm. And that might just be hard to do, you know, when we're talking about how many matches that are being presented on television, or even on a pay-per-view. But did you not feel that for tonight's show, given that there were at least some ramifications for every single match on tonight's card?
It was a little bit mixed. I think there were certain matches where I did feel them. Like, I'm like a diehard Cody Rhodes fan, so that main event I was able to sink my teeth into it and stuff. But other matches, like the women's tag match and stuff, I did kind of struggle, quite honestly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, thank you for checking in and letting us know. I'm sure a lot of people might share your thoughts. Some people might disagree with your thoughts as well. So thank you, Andy.
Thanks, Andy.
Let's go up next to Ian from Best Film Ever. Hey, Ian.
Ian.
Hello, gentlemen. How are we doing this afternoon or evening? I guess I should say, from my perspective here.
We're doing well. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
Man, how enjoyable is it to watch a wrestling pay-per-view at a reasonable time, at least from my perspective? Based in the UK, 6 p.m. start time, I'm done and listening to you guys by about 9:30. What a wonderful world. My first question is actually directed at you guys, though, because this reminds me, I grew up in Canada. It reminds me of watching pay-per-views, WrestleMania and things like that. around 1 p.m. in those early sort of Hogan Warrior era sort of timeframes. What would it do to the way you run things if there were more international PLEs that resulted in a more Eurocentric start time? How does your production change based on a 1 p.m. start time? Yeah, 1 p.m. start time rather than, say, a 7 or an 8 p.m. start time.
Well, we'd be much happier people. That would be the start. I would be happy if this company just uprooted itself and went to the UK. I'd put every pay-per-view in the UK. This was an excellent crowd, excellent start time. The idea that we're done this by like 5:30 Eastern is it would be wonderful. But I think it wouldn't. We just get stuff done a lot earlier and have an evening in front of us. So yeah, I would have no complaints at all about, and I think you're going to see a lot more of the. They've flat out stated that a lot of these more, your BPLEs are going to likely be international shows where you can acquire these site fees, and you're in an era now on streaming where this is not the harm that it would be if you're selling pay per views where they always want to stay in that U.S. prime time slot.
Yeah, I think our lives would be a lot more regular and routine. And we'd essentially shift more to like a 9-to-5, which I think would be at this point very nice to try once in a while rather than kind of shifting our schedules from time to time and dealing with sort of the night shift. I think it would be really positive, honestly.
It's interesting that you guys mentioned, you know, obviously this is a B-level PLE, and it was a very basic show of just the 5 matches. And I think it showed if you take it to a market that's hot, if it wasn't your typical Backlash of, say, 10 years ago, where everything's just a rematch from WrestleMania, not that the stories that were there had a great deal in it. And yet, as Triple H reminded us, you know, it's the highest grossing gate of all time, to which I did have a chuckle at the fans cheering along. I mean, that arena only holds 11,500. I don't know if I'd be sitting there going, I've been fleeced more than anybody else in the history of the company for my seat. But it does seem that there's this second level of narrative or kayfabe. And I don't know if this is a WWE, AEW tribalism thing, but the financial records and our participation in them have become part of the story, I think, to a certain degree.
Yeah. Well, at this point, we're talking about like the success of the company and therefore who's responsible for the success and how much am I, through my local participation, contributing to the movement of this run that the WWE is on right now. There's a good feeling of, I guess, community and just like, this is my team and look how successful my team is type of feeling that I think is attached to like those sort of announcements.
Thank you very much. With that, I'm going to get out of here. Thank you very much, gentlemen. You remain the industry standard. Thank you kindly.
Thanks so much, Ian.
Thank you. It was so nice to hear from you, Ian. Please call back soon. All right. Let's go up next to Muggin. Hey, Muggin. Hi.
Tangaloa, your thoughts, Muggin?
Well, I mean, I was looking for a Samoan werewolf in Paris, but everything, ain't nobody realer than Gorilla, so that's the next best thing.
Oh my goodness!
Excellent. I had to. It was sitting there, so I took it. I took it. Very yes, nice. Leon eclipsed Puerto Rico. I'm telling you, I mean, like that opener was so bonkers. And when it came time for the women's triple threat, I was a little nervous that, you know, they're going to be put in a death spot, having to follow that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Leon, they started here and it just kept going. It kept going from start to finish.
Well, it helps that it helps that it was only a 5-card show. You know, you want, I mean, I think this was a crowd that Corrale could have handled a 15-card show too. But yeah, the fact that it was 5, I mean, every match had pretty much like a similar level of atmosphere.
Leon being so red hot from start to finish enhanced everything. Like, I mean, like the atmosphere and the pacing was very reminiscent of a takeover, because, you know, that was a formula that worked. That was a formula that worked. You know, 5 matches, no Seth, no Roman, no Becky, no Rhea, no Sami Zayn. I mean, that to me is a testament to the depth of the roster.
Really is. Yeah.
Truly. And there's a lot of tantalizing directions coming out of several of them. That little skit with Jey Uso crossing paths with G.O.D. and Solo Sikoa, and Heyman giving Jey a look like, this is not my idea. Mm-mm.
So what are you thinking? What do you think that leads to?
Well, I mean, well, listen, Jacob Fatu has yet to show up. So, I mean, I'm sure they're going to save his debut for a soon-to-be-determined date. So, and with Jimmy Uso being on the shelf for a little while, that'll be the opening for Jimmy to come back and, you know, bail his brother out.
So you think Jimmy and Jey reunite versus this sort of G.O.D. and Solo bloodline? Where does Jacob join, and where does Roman join?
Well, listen. I mean, Roman can't rush back. They can't rush him back right now. So I mean, it has to be like, you know. I mean, at this point, it has to be probably because I would see Jacob Fatu, you know, joining the Usos for a little while before flipping, because he's a Fatu after all. They're blood. So I mean, I could see a scenario where Jacob Fatu joins Jimmy and Jey for a while and until he eventually flips. That's how I would see it. And Damian Priest is knocking on the door of going of a babyface turn, given the fact that he didn't want, you know, Lego Head and Finn Balor's help during the match with Jey, and you know, and with like Rhea being gone is actually a blessing in disguise, because it's going to expedite, you know, Judgment Day falling apart, because if you take the glue away, everything falls apart.
And where do you see Damian being paired coming out of this? Do they run back him and Jey, or do you do something else in a couple of weeks on the Saudi Arabia show?
I mean, they could heat somebody up. They could heat somebody up for Damian Priest, you know, for Saudi. And I mean, Jey loses nothing. He's bulletproof. I mean, like the entire building was rocking with him like all night. And seeing the entire building light up with cell phones, it's crazy. And AJ Styles made a statement. Like he's not over the hill. I mean, he showed he got a lot left in the tank. It was like that match was crazy. It was fantastic. And I dread Raw on Monday, because they're gonna have to go back to what chance in Hartford, Connecticut.
Might be a come down from France, but yeah, I think any market is probably gonna be a come down after this weekend.
But to be fair, John, like, you know, King of the Ring as it stands, and of course Queen of the Ring, they look pretty loaded on paper. I mean, dude, like, goddamn, we're getting Ricochet, Ilya Dragunov on Monday. Like, oh my god, and of course, Gunther Sheamus 3. Like, man, and this is just the first half. This is just half of the brackets. We don't even know what the SmackDown side is going to look like for both King and Queen tournaments. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, though, I mean, with WrestleMania going to Vegas on April 19th and 420. I guess who knows?
Will you be there, Muggy?
I mean, I can bet your RVD is going to be there, because you know it makes perfect sense.
Man, yes, he's all over the streets, profits with the smoke.
Oh, you know who I'm happy for is the Grim Reaper. He'll be booked, I'm sure, all throughout the collective that week.
But ultimately, I do see Gorillas of Destiny and Usos being a WrestleMania match for one of the nights.
If they can manage to keep it that hot, yeah.
Maybe.
Absolutely. Thank you, Muggin. Appreciate the call.
Thank you,
guys. Have a good night, Muggin.
Take care. Okay, we have a couple super chats here before we go to our final call. Let's go, first of all, here to John Ferrier 316, who sends $7. Thank you very much, John. When will Toronto get a WrestleMania? It's been 22 years and counting. And when will Jacob Fatu join the bloodline?
Well, I think Jacob Fatu will be on camera a lot quicker than Toronto gets a WrestleMania. Yeah, it's been 22 years, and quite frankly, the Rogers Center to me is just not like a state-of-the-art building that they're going to be looking at running. Yes, you have.
It's also cold.
It's cold. I mean, you can push it later, but it's not a state-of-the-art arena. You have the difference of, you know, it's like you're spending in U.S. dollars, but taking in Canadian. Like there just isn't that rush to come to Toronto. Like I would say, if you're gonna take WrestleMania to an international market, I'm not looking at Canada. Like I'm looking at a London or you know, a European destination before I'm looking at Canada, for instance. So I can't imagine Toronto would be on their list of priority destinations for a WrestleMania. For another pay-per-view, sure.
You're getting Money in the Bank. All right.
And Heatwave.
Heatwave. Yes.
There you go.
That's fine. All set. Derek Crawford sends $10 to say, was listening to you guys last night about Drake and Kendrick, and they dropped again. So now Wayne Pollock, what is the latest update or score? Love Drake, but Kendrick, woo, got a rep for the six.
I'm sorry. Drake is the Toronto Maple Leafs in this situation. I think he's, you know, the momentum is against him. I don't know. Kendrick took a big lead, I would say, on Friday night. Would you concur?
Yeah. So heading into, like, yesterday was crazy, okay? Because
What was the exact time in between, like an hour?
So it was crazy just even from the start of the day. I think, like, we were still, for me at least, like, still living off the fumes from euphoria earlier in the week. And at that point, like, everybody's kind of waiting for Drake to release his release. And then before Drake could even release his, Kendrick released 616 in L.A., which is his freestyle, that basically accused Drake's camp of having some moles. That was just, you know, more of just a sort of I think people have, like, suggested that that might have been bait in order to get Drake to release that night. So Drake ended up releasing at, like, 10-something. It's warfare. It's public warfare, and it's fascinating. So Drake releases his song, and it wasn't just a song. It was a video where he took the you know, he took the Good Kid, Mad City van, and he brought it out to thank you, Brandon, a collision sort of like one of those, like, car sort of I guess disposal plants in Vaughan. and then that was the video. He went to New Ho King, like, just basically, like, and the crux of the song, though, was Drake accusing Kendrick of domestic violence, and, you know, going through a divorce, and, like, these are very, very awful things, you know, that are being accused of. So we're all still reacting to that, still, like, you know, trying to dig through the Easter eggs in the video and everything. And then not even an hour later, Kendrick releases his song, which was clearly, I think, his biggest ammunition. And in this song called Meet the Grams, he addresses every single member of the Graham family, including 7-year-old Sandra. Adonis, Drake's parents, and... There are very serious accusations there of, like, Drake being involved in sex trafficking, Drake being equated to Harvey Weinstein as somebody who should rot in jail. The biggest bombshell, I guess, for a lot of people was the reveal of apparently Drake hiding another child, this time an 11-year-old girl. So this is the level of rap beef now where... T, as I guess, you know, the new generation likes to call it, is sort of what wins rap battles. How much can you uncover about somebody? Drake has since denied the allegations of, like, having a second child. Like, he responded on Instagram saying that this was news to him. So there needs to be some verification, I think, for all of these claims, but it got really ugly. Like, it's gotten really ugly in this war. But I will still say, I think, just given, like, when we're strictly judging the chess moves and how, like, people are handling PR, I think the move of Kendrick releasing in the morning, getting Drake to release in the evening, and then immediately cutting Drake's momentum off, like, within the hour by releasing that much bigger of a song with Meet the Gramps, you have to give, like, Kendrick the win here. And I just think, even as a lyricist and as songs, like, he released better songs too, but it's been a really intense battle, and it completely ramped up last night. So those are my thoughts, and let's get this person's thoughts. Brandon from New Jersey, are you in Vaughan right now trying to pick up the pieces of the good Kid, Mad City van?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
What's going on? Yeah, when I saw the video and I saw the company and yeah. Oh man,
you did your research.
Yeah, I had to do some research.
Are you the mole?
Yeah. Oh no. Oh God, no, man. I'm not good at that, man. Come on. I love the samples that these guys are using, specifically Kendrick Lamar in these diss tracks. Like, and he's getting help from Taylor Swift's producer too, which is
Taylor made.
Pretty crazy stuff. But yeah, the samples of these songs are incredible. Using Marvin Gaye, Teddy Pendergrass is pretty awesome. But I had to look up Vaughn and just reminisce about the good times that we all had in the great city of Vaughn. Right, John?
Yeah. You know what they say. Going, Vaughn.
Yeah, John, Leafs lose, all hell's is going to break loose on Kipper and Board on 590 and Sportsnet 360 and Sportsnet Plus, eh?
It'll be a tough night for Leaf Nation, but you know what? An inevitable one. This is how they like to play things. You know, the fun is like going up on the roller coaster and not the not the free fall afterward. But that's what we're in the midst of as we are 3 hours out from a puck drop tonight. Will you be watching tonight? Will you have this and the Canelo fight and 301 on three screens?
Well, I'll have the Leafs game on Sportsnet Plus.
Oh, of course.
No, but yeah, I'll be checking out all three.
Probably going to bump the prelims to streaming tonight on Sportsnet. Oh, no doubt. I guess. But, yeah.
It's a thick night for sports. I used to have sympathy for the Leafs, but you know, Kipper and Bourne kind of you know, took the taste out of my mouth with the diss at a Flyer. So. You know, I hope the Leafs.
You strike me as more of a Scott Oak type of guy.
He's got a killer. He's got. Hey, man. Hey.
Scott Oak is the man.
He is the man. He is the man. And stylish dude also. But you know, I disagree with Magan. You know, Leon Slater France didn't. Didn't eclipse Puerto Rico, but it was
Leon Slater France.
it was a good crowd. That AJ Cody match was, we got a burning hammer. I mean, new era, man. really going to the egg dome with these types of matches, main event. But I thought it was a good show, solid all around. The guys worked, the women and men worked hard. Good show, man. And it ended early. We're talking at 5 o'clock in the evening, man. This is great, man. I'm not used to talking to you guys this early in the evening.
Yeah, I mean, if you and Jordan Goodman drive to Las Vegas next year for Mania, I mean, it'll be down at a relatively normal time on the West Coast.
You going?
I don't know yet. It'll depend if you're going.
I heard some a British invasion might happen. I'm being coerced to going. So, I mean, we'll see what happens, but it should be fun. I mean, SummerSlam weekend should be fun. I mean, not SummerSlam. Money in the Bank weekend should be.
Yeah,
fun.
Don't come on the wrong weekend.
I know, right? I show
Brandon,
up.
Brandon comes SummerSlam weekend when it's in Cleveland.
Yeah, everybody's in Cleveland. Way's at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I'm in Vaughn looking for Drake and the van.
Just Brandon sitting alone in the top of Sneaky D's.
those French fries. That King's Crown is overrated, by the way. I think I've said that.
Yeah, before. It kind of is. But it hits well. Like
it does, you know, hit well, especially when you're hungry and you've been drinking all night. It does hit the spot, but it ain't the bee's knees. You know what I'm saying?
It's no New Ho King.
No, absolutely. New Ho King is awesome, man. I recommend dine and dashing over there.
Okay.
All right, guys.
Hey, Brandon.
Evening. What's up, man?
Nice haircut.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much.
Good night.
I got the Travis Kelce. Good night.
Oh, my goodness.
The one and only.
Thankfully.
Forum.postwrestling.com for some of your written feedback from the day. John, would you like to start us off?
Cameron writes in from Bristol. It's funny how much a fantastic crowd can elevate a PLE. Over-delivered for me, 5 solid matches in 3 hours. For the premium live event with a very quick build, it was a fun show. Until today, last year's Backlash was my favorite crowd. King and Queen of the Ring lineups look incredible. Thank you for the content, guys. I always look forward to your reviews. Well, thank you, Cameron. Mm-hmm. I did find this to be... I mean, we are still talking 5 matches in 3 hours, which to me is still in a massive amount of time, but I did not feel like the drag on this show. And with these shows, you naturally take your breaks in between matches because you pretty much have 10 minutes of downtime between matches.
I actually started later and I actually found myself having to keep up. with the rest of the show. So it flew right by for me. Brandon from Oshawa says, this was by far the best WWE show in years. They need to get on top of getting France a big show sometime next year. This crowd would be even more insane in front of 50,000 plus people.
I wouldn't go so far as to say the best show in years, but definitely I would argue the best crowd in years. I honestly believe this is one of the best crowds they have ever had for a show from start to finish. I think it'd be a very small number that would equal this one that they had. Jay in Colorado, a very enjoyable show that was taken from great to amazing by the red hot crowd in Lyon. Everyone brought their A game and it showed perfect synergy of performance and crowd interaction. Absolutely dope to be finished with a PLE at 2 p.m. Mountain Time and still have the rest of my day to go. I really hope they do more of these overseas shows.
Absolutely dope.
It was dope. That was the word of the day.
All right, let's go to Jeremy from Texas, who says, I'm curious if we see this format for the BPLEs moving forward with this takeover style of fewer matches that get more time. I feel like that's sort of been the case over the past several BPLEs, at least. It was an entertaining show, had progression with the bloodline angle, but it wasn't a show you had to see. I love to see these underserved markets getting the spotlight. That crowd was amazing. With Cody and the WWE title likely being on every PLE moving forward, how do you make the world title not seem like a consolation prize? Viva WrestleMania Las Vegas. Cue up that Bobby Heenan backwards on a camel footage.
In relation to the world title question, I think you just have to have compelling contenders, strong stories for Damian Priest to be involved with, and it won't so much be a 1A versus 1B title. It's just going to be, this is the title on one show, that's the title on the other show. I think both can be presented as strong belts, but if you're asking me, my preference is always going to be just the one central championship that everyone is fighting for. I think you break them in half and you kind of lose something by trying to put them separate, and I think everyone does view the Cody championship as the prestigious belt.
Cody is the bigger star compared to Damian Priest, who really is just kind of starting off his journey towards being seen as like a main eventer. So I think until you get a Seth Rollins or a CM Punk or Drew McIntyre, maybe a Sami Zayn in that role to oppose Damian Priest for the championship, it's not going to feel bigger than a Cody match if a Cody match is on the same show. So, you know, I wouldn't necessarily expect Cody to defend the championship every single pay-per-view. Like, some pay-per-views he might not appear at all. Some pay-per-views he might be working tag matches, and those could present opportunities for either Damian Priest or Becky Lynch, you know, to headline one of these shows. Let's also remember, Becky Lynch is also on Raw, so, like, I don't think it's completely reliant for, like, Raw's A program to be a Damian Priest World Championship program either. It could be Becky Lynch, you know, title program as well. But it's on any show with Cody and Damian Priest, it'll be a struggle for Priest. So, you know, it'll probably depend on, like, really strong contenders in order to boost him up to that higher level.
So overall, a lot of positivity from today's Backlash France show, a phenomenal crowd, and I think it lifted everything on the show. So I thought it was a very strong outing for the company. They have one live event in France tomorrow, and then it's back for at least the Raw crew on Monday with 8 matches announced for Hartford, Connecticut. As we mentioned, coming up later on this weekend, no Collision Course tonight because AEW is off. But on Sunday, Karen Peterson and Bruce Lord will be up at postwrestlingcafe.com with their thoughts on the Wrestling Dontaku events and giving all of the rundown of what's happening in New Japan. Also, a shout out to Karen Peterson, who recently interviewed Julia on her YouTube channel. We have a link to it through the site that you can go check and hear her speak with Julia for about a half hour on ending her run with Stardom, the launch of Marigold, and all things related to Julia. So you can check that out, and that is
And a shout out to our sponsors, NordVPN, eBay Motors. Support them if you want to support us. Thank you guys for listening.
Have a good evening.